T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
We just saw that there was a lot of good plays, and then there was plays in there too that we can learn from and correct. And that's very natural in his position with where we're at in this offense. That's going to happen. It's going to happen when you win by 30. That same thing's going to happen. So we'll correct the ones that he needs to get better at. We'll understand why. You know, he'll give me his feedback. Well, this is what I saw. I'll give him my feedback. Well, this is what you need to look at. And then we try to find a happy medium. And then the next time we see that play, that coverage, he'll make the play.
Middays on the Score.
That's Matt Nagy talking about his prize pupil, Mitchell Trubisky, who actually had a lot to say yesterday. And these guys both have had a lot to say. They're actual human beings in this whole thing, and it's making it interesting. They're really letting us in on this process. I don't know if it makes you feel a little uncomfortable, if it makes you feel...
It does make me feel a little uncomfortable.
A little voyeuristic.
But like, in a good way. You know, it's like I'm opening up, you know, to people or, you know, relation for the first time. It's one of those like, oh, this is how, you know, people function. You know, you leave this tortured relationship where there is no truth or honesty with John Fox, and then you go to something else that's just any different at all. And you're like, oh, this is fine. You can do this. You're okay. You're going to be okay. But you still feel a little weird the entire time it's happening, you know, talking about things and feelings and, you know, cover twos and protection schemes and screen routes. It's all that kind of thing.
We're expecting to have a conversation with Robert Mays in just a little bit, trying to establish contact with him. I guess that's a larger question then about how that feels. Maybe we should examine that a little bit later on in the show. This would you rather
wait talk would, about feelings?
Would, no, not necessarily know. About feelings, but would you rather be rooting for this sort of faceless automaton who just represents you and your sports fandom? And but is this the fact that both Nagy and Trubisky let you in? Does that buy them? Does humanizing a lot of this buy them some empathy, maybe a little bit less of a fire this guy, cut this guy, go to Chase Daniel? Does it hold some of that off if they let you see the wires?
I think it does, but if it's the automaton and it's winning, that's one thing. And if it's the feelings monster and they're dropping 20-point leads, then no.
Robert Mays writes for The Ringer. He is on Twitter at Robert Mays. Should you choose to follow him there, I suggest you do, and he is with us on The Score. Hello, Robert. How are you?
Good, guys. How you doing?
Good. We're one week in, and I found this interesting that on September 6th, Bovada had the Bears at 66-1 to win the Super Bowl. So they go on Sunday Night Football. They have the half of all halves, and then they collapse, and they emerge as only 33-1 to win the Super Bowl. So despite the outcome, despite all of our wailing and gnashing of teeth, the betting world expressed a great deal of confidence after that performance. What about you?
That's encouraging, because that kind of puts an objective spin on the wallowing that's happened over the last week or so, which I appreciate. I'm glad there's something to kind of bring it back to some baseline feeling. But I can understand that to some degree. I feel like the defense, when Mac was on the field, you know, against a very good pass-blocking offensive line, looked like it might be formidable all year. I mean, even against Aaron Rodgers, they played great in that first half. Roquan Smith's going to play more. I mean, you could see kind of the projection and the extrapolation there. And the offense showed flashes. Obviously, the second half was maddening. But at the same time, I mean, I know that I was jubilant when you just see an NFL offense on the field compared to what's happened the last couple years. So I feel like the best-case scenario of what the season could have been was on display for two quarters, and I guess that's enough to make you more optimistic for the long term, even if Sunday night was kind of deflating.
Yeah, I guess, you know, to a certain point, Robert, I've spent the week figuring out whether blowing the lead like they did is a good thing, because, yeah, they blew it, but it also took a Hall of Fame effort from a Hall of Fame quarterback to complete the blowing of that lead. Or is it... Or is it just you blew a 20-point lead and you just can't do it? And I guess I've been, over the week, more and more satisfied by the fact that it was Aaron Rodgers who did it, despite the fact that that hurts so very much.
I think the line between being able to take something from this and being completely destroyed by it is very thin. And I feel like I've teetered on either side as well for the last, like, 5 days. For me, it's, is this a constructive experience? You know, not necessarily how are we going to frame it, and is it just a 20-point blown lead, or is it Aaron Rodgers? But are they going to look at this and say, oh, we're real. We can come and play in this league. And I think that would make this healthy. If it's this will haunt them for the rest of the season and hang over them for the next month, one, that's an indictment of Matt Nagy, and two, that's the way this can go south. So I feel like it's more about how they take this and go from here rather than how we frame it and how we kind of characterize it.
We got to look at a lot of different quarterbacks in a lot of different places, familiar names, unfamiliar colors, and I'm curious what you think mattered in week one. What did you see that means I got to go back and see more of this, or did you see anybody and say, ooh, I'm done with this guy?
I mean, I'm done with everything that's happening in Buffalo. I think I was going to be that way before the season even started. I ranked all 32 teams before the season. I mean, if I could have put them at 35, I would have. I mean, that's one of the worst rosters I've ever seen, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And now they're bringing in a guy who wasn't a prospect most people were excited about to begin with. And you put him in just the worst infrastructure and support system like that you can possibly imagine. So that I'm all set with. In Arizona, I feel like it's not as bad. And that's why I would lean toward just going with Rosen if you feel like this is a lost season anyway. I can also see them not wanting to ruin him. I remember talking to Greg Olson, the current Raiders offensive coordinator and the old Rams quarterbacks coach, about Jared Goff. And he just said that he felt 7 games during Goff's rookie year was a good time. It's a good amount because it wasn't enough time to develop scar tissue in a really bad situation. So I feel like kind of finding that balance of getting your guy experience while also not ruining him and making him see ghosts for the next 2 years, that's something you have to think about. So those two situations, I feel like they're going to have to make that decision. I feel like every other quarterback that was in a new spot, I was relatively encouraged by. You know, even Case Keenum against Seattle, I feel like that offense, again, just with baseline quarterback play, is going to be so much better than it was last year. You forget how good Emmanuel Sanders is. Andrew Luck looked like Andrew Luck. I mean, he's not throwing 60-yard bombs, but he's not going to this year. They're going to do so much just based on schematic design to get the ball out of his hand quickly. And I love that. I love just letting him be a quarterback that avoids hits and just be the point guard of that team rather than a guy who has to carry everything. That team may not win 5 games because their defense is just a mess, but the offense, I think, is going to score a lot more points than we probably thought coming into the season.
We were
Tyrod
talking
Taylor,
to...
I was disappointed by. I mean, everybody else is like, okay, like this could work. I thought Kirk Cousins looked excellent. I thought that Minnesota offense outside of the running game with that banged up offensive line looked like it's going to be really good all year. I think most of these teams are pretty satisfied with the choices that they made.
What kind of lessons, if any, I mean, if there aren't, what kind of lessons or things do you take to apply to Mitch Trubisky that you've seen from some of the young quarterbacks that have had their performances either kind of checked up on or pushed forward, like Pat Mahomes, who's had a great start, or Dak Prescott, who's fallen back, or Jimmy Garoppolo, who threw interceptions to every Viking he could find?
I'm going to say that the Garoppolo thing is more about the Vikings than it is about the 49ers okay. offense. I mean, they lost both starting guards, and that's just a situation where Mike Zimmer is going to pound that until you start crying. I mean, it's he really took advantage of them having shuffling up front and all the blitzes and whatever. But I think it's more about just putting your guys in the right spots to succeed. I mean, if you two situations I would use as an example. One would be Mahomes, and two would be Jared Goff. And I think that you saw just the uptick in play action for Jared Goff in his first season. And just the fact that they led the league in play action percentage, all of the open windows he's able to throw the ball into because of how perfect the run and the pass game are married in LA. And I think that, you know, I was talking to Sean McVay about this before the season, he feels the same way about Andy Reid. I mean, he loves just how coordinated Andy Reid's offense is, and I guess by extension what Matt Nagy's offense would ideally be. With Mahomes, I mean, just it's about design. It's about design, creativity, being open-minded to everything. I mean, you look at just the stuff they ran around in the red zone last week. Stuff that last year they had ran these little shovel passes to Travis Kelce, and they do that exact same formation, except they just flip it to DeAnthony Thomas coming across. Mm. They always have a wrinkle for what's next. And that's why I love the Trubisky touchdown in the red zone, because that's a wrinkle off of the play we'd seen earlier that drive with Charles Leno lined up out there. So I think that with Nagy, you have a combination of that stuff. I think you're going to see a lot of play action. You're going to see a lot of Trubisky on the move. And you're also going to see a lot of wrinkles that allow him to have easy throws. Whether he takes advantage of those throws is an entirely different conversation, because I think that was kind of the crux of the problem on Sunday.
In a conversation with Hub Arkush earlier in the week, talking about the Raiders, he used the term tanking. He said that this old roster and this the time in Oakland, they're just buying time until they go to Las Vegas, at which time they'll actually try harder to win. And John Gruden is so rock solid in his position that they feel they can do this. Do you concur with that assessment, or is Gruden trying to win now and just putting this together in a way that isn't working?
I don't understand why you would tank with old players. I feel like if you're going to tank, isn't it worth just throwing out a bunch of young, cheap guys and just seeing who can play and who can't? I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. Why would you overspend for veterans like Jordy Nelson and those guys, when in reality it's probably easier just to be $100 million under the salary cap, hit the floor, and just go from there. Spend as little money as you can and give young, cheap players chances. I mean, I know the Browns weren't exactly the bastion of efficiency over the last couple of years, but that's what they did. And that's how you found guys like Larry Ogunjobi and younger players that are stepping up for them a little bit, your Joe Schoberts and everything. And that's why I just don't get it with the Raiders. I mean, why would you give opportunities to middling expensive veterans if you don't want to win any games? It just seems like that's not a good long-term plan.
I mean, I know it's somewhat of a rhetorical question, Robert, but I assume part of the answer to that has to be because John Gruden wants everyone to know he's John Gruden.
Sure. I mean, if we're, these are two different conversations, though.
Yeah,
if
I suppose.
It's about winning football games 3 years from now, that's fine. If it's about showing everyone I'm the $100 million man and I'm going to do whatever I want, then that's fine too. But don't pretend like it's some grand plan to eventually become a real football team.
Yeah, that's true.
Do you think Ben Roethlisberger is not okay? You know, where there are people wondering, every year it seems it's like, oh, well, he's lost a step or his timing isn't there. At some point, it's going to be over. At some point, we're just going to know it. But he's rebounded from these things in the past. There have been other seasons in which we've said it, and then the next game, he's got people hanging on him, and he's throwing for 320 yards and four touchdowns.
I'd like to see them play at home this week. I mean, they're playing against a terrible Chiefs defense. I could absolutely see him lighting it up. But I feel like he's at this point now where it's just going to be inconsistent. There's going to be 1 week where, like, oh, this is over. I mean, think about Jacksonville last year. I mean, everyone was signing his death certificate. And then they come back and they're a reasonable offense for the rest of the season. So I just don't feel like it's going to be a week-to-week, you know, mindless kind of 300-yard games like it was a couple of years ago. I mean, in 2015, he was arguably one of the best two or three quarterbacks in the NFL. He was fantastic. I think those days are gone. I'm not sure if the cliff is quite there yet. It might be, because it's going to come without any sort of notice. So if you told me in week four he's shot, I would believe you, but I'm not quite ready to say it quite yet.
I was watching a little bit of tape. Is the Seahawks offensive line as bad as I thought it was, or I saw it be? Is Russell Wilson's safety in trouble here against Akeem Hicks and Khalil Mack and everybody else who's going to come after him?
Probably. Yeah, okay. I think he's in trouble against not like terrifying NFL pass rushes. I think against middling ones, he's going to be in trouble.
Okay.
But the Bears don't have one. I think they are in trouble. I also think that last week, you were reminded just how good Von Miller is.
Yeah.
I mean, every once in a while, he's just going to dominate a game. And so many of those sacks are such a misleading stat. You know, T.J. Watt had four last week. And he really did. I mean, he did not have a four-sack game when you think about the way he played. Von Miller was every bit as good as his number showed on Sunday. He was unbelievable.
Robert Mays, our guest on Sports Radio 670 WSCR, The Score. The Patriots play the Jacksonville Jaguars in a rematch of an AFC championship game. Now already we have Jalen Ramsey and Rob Gronkowski going after each other. What are you watching in this game as everybody else is going to be watching?
A couple different things. I feel like how the Patriots attack Jacksonville is going to be something that is curious. Last year they did a lot of stuff where they tried to attack Telvin Smith and the other linebackers with wide receivers from the slot. They did it with Amendola a lot. They did it with Brandon Cooks a lot. Both of those guys aren't there. So the Jaguars don't have many weaknesses, and that's what the Patriots do well. I mean, they hammered Zach Cunningham and Kevin Johnson last week. And I don't know if the Jags have those guys. So how they try to move the ball around without as many wide receivers and having to go to running backs where those mismatches inside aren't as pronounced, I'm curious to see how that's going to go. On the other side, I just feel like one of the best matchups in the NFL this week is the Jags defensive line against the Patriots offensive line. I mean, New England is so good right to left, and trading for Trent Brown for a third-round pick and paying him $2 million may save their season. I mean, after losing Isaiah Wynn, that could have been a huge hole without Brown, and he's a real NFL offensive tackle. I mean, they shut down the Texans last week. And if they can slow that pass rush down, I mean, the same way they did a week ago, I feel like the Patriots will be able to move the ball.
Robert, appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely, guys.
That is Robert Mays of The Ringer, their NFL columnist.
Quality stuff.
Yeah, that's solid content there.
Quality stuff.
Very, very good. We have an extensive Chicago Blackhawks medical update. The team physician has released updates on multiple players, and the news is not...
That's never good.
Yeah, it's really not good. Corey Crawford is not even one of them. We're still waiting for Corey Crawford to meet the media to find out what the hell's going on. What is all this? Where are you? What's happening? And I know we had a lot of people lined up who still wanted to talk about everything that happened and how it all went down yesterday in Washington. Feel free. If we couldn't get you on, now's a good time. 312-644-6767. The Friday edition of the Bernstein and McKnight Show here on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Listen up, ladies and gentlemen. Our fugitive has been on the run for 90 minutes. Average foot speed over uneven ground, barring injuries, 4 miles an hour. That gives us a radius of 6 miles. What I want out of each and every one of you is a hard target search of every gas station, residence, warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area. Checkpoints go up in 15 miles. Your fugitive's name is
Corey Crawford.
Go get him.
And said before, if that movie were reflective of today, Tommy Lee Jones would be about a third of the way through that iconic speech, and someone would say, yeah, we got him.
We got him. It's cool. He used the cell phone, so, you know, we got him.
Yeah, he's fine. He's in custody. He's back in the prison. Everybody go home.
Kimball? Oh, no, he's in handcuffs.
Oh, I thought you were going to say somebody else. We got Kimball.
No, we got Kimball. Are you kidding? Like, out the train, we got him.
The Score would like to let everyone know that tonight's Top Draft Show, presented by Miller Lite at Old Republic in Elgin, featuring Lance Briggs, will be postponed due to the Cubs game moving from an afternoon to an evening game. You're still welcome to stop by Old Republic in Elgin and catch Friday night's game and the Bears game on Monday night. So Corey Crawford's going to talk to people and tell everybody what's going on, but here is what the Blackhawks telling people what's happening elsewhere. This just released. Chicago Blackhawks team physician Dr. Michael Terry says defenseman
is he a doctor of sacks?
Yes, he is. Defenseman Connor Murphy will be out of the lineup approximately 8 weeks with a back injury.
It's a long time.
Defenseman Brent Seabrook will be out of the lineup approximately 1 week with an abdominal injury.
Congrats on the ab, Brent.
We found one.
The
he
lead
needs to sit a week.
The lead has been buried. Brent Seabrook has abdominals. Although maybe the maybe the abdominal injury was like too much ice cream or something.
I don't understand the concept.
Did it again.
As previously announced, Gustav Forsling continues to recover from surgery on his right wrist and remains out of the lineup. In addition, the Chicago Blackhawks also announced that forward Jordan Mileta will not attend training camp.
No!
And does not exist.
They also announced they will not be good this year.
Wow. The current training camp roster stands at 57 players.
Go Bears!
All right. Okay. This is Joe in Hinsdale. He's on the Score. Hey, Joe.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Fine.
Hey, I understand the importance. Like, they have all the bullpen arms, the Cubs do, and they have guys on the bench to cover for pinch hitters. Can this not strengthen a case for the DH in the National League now, especially with the importance on these relievers' arms, taxing them, and this being the perfect storm of, 30 games in 30 days? What do you guys think on this?
Oh, I've been on this forever. I've been very clear. I think the DH should be in both leagues. I don't need to watch. Yeah. I don't need to watch pitchers hit. I don't really understand it. There's no point to it. So I don't think this is now the crossing of the Rubicon.
Nor will there ever be a moment where the forces that be finally go, oh, that's why we need a DH. That's not happening.
Every other league at every other level of the sport uses the DH.
Yeah, it's not going to happen that way. There's not going to be one moment where both sides of the argument wake up and go, oh, now there needs to be a DH. Nor will it go the other way. Nor will there be some sort of Madison Bumgarner home run to win. I just picked Bumgarner because he can hit. Bumgarner home run to win a World Series game or something, and you go, oh, we don't need a DH. That moment will not happen. It's going to be slow grinding away of old norms and working in, and young norms and working into new jobs. That's all it's going to be. It's just going to be this slow, grindy process like baseball it's always been.
Or it's collective bargaining. And the union just says, look, let's do this. It's going to create a bunch of new jobs. Might be able to keep some veteran hitters in the game a little while longer.
Do you think, though, that the way the relationship has been described between the players' union and Major League Baseball at this point allows for the DH to be a conversation point when the CBA comes around? I don't know. I hope it is. I hope we get to a point where that's in a CBA and it's just kind of done. But the way it's being described, the way we kind of have read reporting about it, I think there are going to be a lot of other sticking issues that get in the way of putting that into a CBA.
This segment is brought to you by Subway. Check out three signature wrap flavors to savor at Subway restaurants. Try the classic style of the turkey Italiano melt. Get yourself some bold taste with the Chipotle Southwest steak and cheese, or enjoy the tangy flavor of the buffalo chicken wrap. Subway, make it what you want. Limited time only at participating locations. Let's try Montgomery next and Jeff on the score. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, Dan, Con, how you doing?
Well.
Good. Good to hear. Instead of being so negative with the Strope issue, the Cubs won the game. Madden does make a lot of boneheaded decisions, but ultimately we win. And the run we've been on the last 4 years as a diehard Cub fan, you've got to be enjoying this, because look at the Nationals. They've had a team that should have won, and now their window's closed with Atlanta coming up and the Phillies being good too.
I don't think they're mutually exclusive, Jeff.
Yeah, I don't either.
I think everybody can operate on multiple channels of expectation and emotion here and know that, yeah, Joe on this year has done an extraordinary job considering all the headwinds. He had a bad day yesterday and might have made his team less likely to win the World Series by needlessly endangering the health of his closer. So I think it's all true. I think when people can zoom out and take a deep breath and say, yeah, the Cubs are in first place and this is more fun than not being in first place.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely.
Yes.
But it raises it's completely reasonable and fair for you to remind people of that, or at least to cause me to remind people of that.
The view from 30,000 feet is a rosy one. This is a golden era of Cubs baseball. Yeah, Jeff, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. I like when Dan's on and McNeil's on the afternoon and how he was off the airways in 2016 and misses it. I really, and I'm not a Sox fan, but I don't hate him. I hope the Sox get there, and I hope the Cubs are still good, because this town would be insane. It'd be so much fun.
With both teams good? Yeah. It's fun anyway.
Peace.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
A little bit of breaking news here that might be of interest to you, just to let you know the headline, that this is completely unexpected. But according to NBC, the prosecutor's agreement with Paul Manafort for the guilty plea is indeed a cooperation agreement.
Really?
Yes.
Because we'd read prior that it was going to be just a kind of boilerplate sort of thing.
Correct. It is being described by prosecutors as a cooperation agreement. That means there's at least a partial flipping of some kind to assist the Russia investigation.
It's a very large and important piece of news.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Tony in Sauganash, you are on the score. Hi, Tony.
Hey, guys. Happy Friday.
You
I got
too.
A thought and a solution. My thought is Pedro Strop is up there. He's a baseball player. Do what you do. anything can happen at the time, whether it's pulling a hamstring. What if the pitcher had sailed in a pitch and broken three of his fingers? We'd be having a different conversation, but with the same outcome. So, I mean, first I'd ask, what would you guys say to that?
Well, Tony, I have no just
problem
to be clear,
with him swinging away.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to cut you off. We'll let you get to the solution, too. But just to be clear, it's my opinion and Dan's, too, I think, that the idea of letting a pitcher bat there instead of going to a pinch hitter or letting him swing with the possible outcomes of a double play, which you did see, that the strategy, even before the injury, didn't cut the mustard for me. I don't think even then it was the right decision to make. I think a lot of people said that then while the game was going on. I don't think that's just second-guessing waking up feeling that way either.
Okay, my solution then to that would be, if Joe Maddon thinks that he has to have Pedro Strop in that inning and doesn't want to take any chances, we have the automatic intentional walk. Why can't we just have you get one automatic out per game?
Why not just
something
have him
like that?
Because you still have – there's nothing to lose to just have him stand there. Unless somebody
you do? What if he gets hit? What if he gets hit and he gets a broken hand? That's what I'm saying.
It's possible, but that's still...
So wait. Hold on. Tony, you're saying that the batting team could just choose to take an out?
One time per game. Yes.
I can't...
In a situation like that.
I'm not...
I mean, it's a little radical, but I'm just saying, like, he's up... anything can happen, whether he gets hit in the
box
whether he's running down...
You trust him to try to get out of the way of something dangerous, especially if you're not trying to hit. That makes you much more able to act defensively in that regard. So I think that's a little extreme. I understand what you're saying, but that would be a little ridiculous.
Yeah, no, I like thinking outside the box. I think when you think outside the box, you come back in eventually or closer to it, and you find out
back into the box.
No, honestly, I think it's worth throwing that stuff out there and seeing what comes back after the discussion. But I can't think, and I'm trying to do the run expectancy matrix in my head and remember exactly where I can't think of a situation where, I mean, an out does not help you get a run in any circumstance. So I can't imagine that Pedro Strop going up there and not swinging helps you more than taking an out. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I just don't know that the return would ever be taken by a team there.
The math would never work, understanding
the
value of outs and the possibility. Hell, look at Carl Edwards Jr. and Yu Darvish in the playoffs. Did you think Yu Darvish was ever planning to try to get a hit? I mean...
Yeah. No, and on the other side of that, too, you've got to... If your argument is he could get hit by a pitch, just we're doing this purely theoretical now. We're removing ourselves from last night's game. If he could get hit by a pitch, then he could also have a wild pitch.
Correct.
And runners could advance. So that you got to...
In Oak Park, here is Les on the score.
Hi. Good morning, you guys.
Morning.
Once again, the Cubs players saved Maddon's rear end. They saved him in the World Series. And yesterday's game, these are specialized times. Pitchers do not train to run the 30-yard sprint. You have the hottest pinch hitter in Cubs history, a guy who thrives on going one for one. Let the guy bat. I mean, it's such a everything can go wrong. By the way, parenthetically, with the holidays coming up, I think any baker out there, La Stella Cookies would be a great name for a cookie. I'd buy dozens.
I don't know.
I mean, I get the point. But again, it's what that tells you. Joe's decision tells you yesterday that the value for him, the value of Pedro Strop pitching that next inning, outweighed the value of more runs.
Right. You pointed out the inherent irony in this.
There is.
His actions reinforced how important Pedro Strop is.
For the long run and in the short run, he told you that Pedro pitching another inning for the Cubs right now, this is Joe's assessment of his team, it's plain as day. Through the choices he made, Pedro pitching another inning was more important to him than putting a hitter up there. Pedro hitting into a double play. Pedro Strop grounding into a double play there was more important for him to pitch next inning than any other outcome. That alone tells you that you can't risk any situation where he's out for the long term. Besides the fact that I don't necessarily buy that strategy, that run management. I don't buy it. And I think Joe made the wrong call doing it. That said, he knows that bullpen and he knows that team. You never know who's got this going on or that going on, but it's just yesterday makes it so tough with, as I think it was Les mentioned, you got Tommy Lestell on the bench. You got Randy Rosario warming up. I mean, the options were there. They were visible. They were literally visible. And that makes it harder to take. And it also, it reinforces the fact that when a manager makes decisions like this, the bad ones always look worse than the good ones can look good.
He's Connor McKnight. I'm Dan Bernstein. Pete Futek will preview the weekend in college football next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Pete Futek.
He's great with a capital G, the highest level of grade.
Publisher of College Football News.
What is it that makes our military superior? He was like, that's easy. We're the only football playing nation in the world.
He hates your favorite team.
Rankings don't matter at the end because they're just going to put Alabama in the college football playoff anyway.
Pete Futek with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Pete Futek gets you ready for college football every Friday. And this segment is brought to you by Bet Chicago. For betting and fantasy football coverage, download the app today and bet for free. This man is on Twitter at Pete Futek. He is college football news and he's on The Score. What do we got this week, Pete? What is grabbing your attention?
A hurricane is grabbing the attention of the entire world. And it's, yeah, there aren't a lot of big games out there. There are a couple of interesting ones, but it is just the, you know, the world as we live in it now with these hurricanes that are going to happen every year. And so it really screwed. Obviously, there's more important things in football about this. But in the football term aspect, these schools, if you're in the Carolinas or Florida or LSU or parts of Texas, you're going to have contingency plans. Because this is going to be a regular thing. And so you have to know if you're a Miami or an LSU or someone like this, in the next 5 years at least, you're going to have to move a game. You're going to have to change something around. And the problem is that schools just aren't very accommodating to help the cause in this situation to get these things figured out. So the business side of this has to have something better in place than to try to scramble in the last second and think, well, maybe we can, you know, schedule incarnate word or something like this in late November or come up with something, because this really does mess with the season and trying to figure out bowl bids, trying to figure out conference action. This is going to be the new norm and part of our college football world, and the schools just aren't prepared for it yet.
So, Pete, to the football side of things, TCU has gotten themselves ranked at number 15. They get Ohio State. Ohio State will not have their grand poobah. This is, you know, TCU just always seems to end up there at the end of things. Are you worried for the Buckeyes at this point?
No, because the grand poobah, Mr. Meyer, was able to practice with the team. He's able to coach the team and do everything with them except be there on game day. But you're right. Even if he was there, it's the coaching matchup with Gary Patterson is dead even. TCU just seems to always have a team that, like you said, is right there. But if Ohio State loses, they gag because they are so much better than TCU. They're so much better than everybody else but Alabama, Georgia, and Clemson. So there's absolutely no excuse with their athletes, with their NFL talent, and they have been just razor sharp on offense so far. There hasn't been a blip against two Power 5 teams, mediocre ones, but two Power 5 teams that they just destroyed. So they should come out and make a big statement. If they come out and do anything but beat TCU by at least two touchdowns, that's just them not playing well. I don't think that's really saying TCU is all that great necessarily.
Yeah, I'm looking at the slate of games here, and I don't.
Well, because USC and Texas sucks.
Yeah,
right.
That's a problem.
That's supposed to be the big game, and you can sell Vince Young 2006 Rose Bowl and Reggie Ball if you want. These two teams are boring, and they're not very good. So if you have USC and Texas, they're both kind of the same level of mediocrity and dullness that they might put together a pretty good game. But Texas is just, they're just not that good. USC doesn't have their offense going yet. So it might be a defensive game, but it might be a close game. But when those two marquee teams are just also Rams, and that tells you one of your big games of the weekend, you're right. There's just not a lot there because we're not really diving deep into conference play quite yet. So there's a couple of good games. I mean, LSU-Auburn is going to be kind of interesting. You mentioned Ohio State-TCU. So there are some good ones out there. But this is the week, that, more than anything else, that the group of fivers get their shot against some of the Power Five teams. So you get Boise State going to Oklahoma State. This is one of those statement moments. Fresno State going to UCLA, that's kind of a statement moment. So you get a couple of those type of games, but for the most part, the big boys are major favorites, and there just aren't a lot of decent conference games quite yet.
I like the Arizona State-San Diego State game. If for nothing else, then I have been really surprised that Herm Edwards is coaching the hell out of that team. He has got – I mean, I'm sure you've seen some of the press conferences. He sat down after practices and has all kinds of swagger about his Sun Devils. That's an interesting squad and an interesting conference given what happened in the first week of the season with Washington.
That was the reason why people didn't like Arizona State to start the year is, one, the schedule looked too daunting, and two, the Herm Edwards hire was weird.
Weird.
But the comp was that, you know, if they'd hired Kevin Sumlin or got Chip Kelly, oh, wow, look at them. They got, but it's like, weird, really, you got Herm Edwards? It's not USC. It's not Pete Carroll. But there's a big comp here where Pete Carroll was out of college football for 18 years. And he came in, obviously, that's a whole different animal to his USC. But coaches kind of know what they're doing. And that was PhD-level stuff that Herm Edwards and that staff came up with to close out that game against Michigan State. And he's been good so far. Now, let's see if they can keep it going. They still have a brutal, nasty schedule to go. But they should be able to beat San Diego State. San Diego State doesn't have its starting quarterback. They have no offense yet. So Arizona State, all right, keep it going. The pass rush has been great. They had talent. They've got NFL guys at wide receiver. They got a veteran quarterback. They're pretty good. So the talent was always there. It was just the, really, you hired Herm Edwards. And so far after two games compared to what the dumpster fire in Tucson with Sumlin and 0-2 UCLA, he's been pretty good so far.
I'm looking at the Iowa State Iowa game from last week, and of course it turned into a because it's always that 1 year they play in the 40s, and then for the rest of the decade they kick a bunch of field goals and everybody misses the damn thing. They get Oklahoma, and a lot of people had said that the Iowa State team had some roster, you know, some serious dudes, some guys that were a little underappreciated, some good players. But Kyler Murray's been something else with Oklahoma, and I can't help but wonder if he's starting to put himself in real quarterback territory, despite the fact that he can run all over the field and does those things that get people, get eyes off, because that's college quarterback stuff.
And despite the fact that he's insane for playing college quarterback when he's a multimillionaire going to play for the Oakland A's whenever he's ready to go.
Yeah, well.
But he's been good. And that was always the thing, is that Baker Mayfield was a special, special quarterback. Just historically great in terms of his production. But Kyler Murray can bring something different. And the crazy part about this Oklahoma offense is humming, and they haven't turned Murray loose yet as a runner. He hasn't run very much. Now, without Rodney Anderson, their NFL-caliber running back who's now out for the year, they're going to have to mix things up a little bit. But Iowa State doesn't have their starting quarterback. Kyle Kemp wasn't very good anyway, but he's the guy who rose up and came out of psych class and beat Oklahoma last year. So they're just not that good. So, again, if you're looking at the big boys, like we said with Ohio State, with Oklahoma, this is where if you're Oklahoma and you're the real deal, you just come out and just rimrock them. I mean, it's no joke. Just beat them by three touchdowns. Show that you're among that conversation of the four or five best teams in the country. And that's what you're supposed to do if you're the Sooners right now.
Can Duke win at Baylor?
Yeah, absolutely. They're good. I think we talked about this last week, where the problem is they don't have their quarterback Daniel Jones anymore. Yeah. They lose their NFL starting cornerback Mark Gilbert for the year, but they still have guys. They're experienced. They're built for this. The system's strong enough. Baylor is just, it took them a year, but they're kind of back to being pretty good. They've got enough good offensive players where they can be strong. The loss of Daniel Jones should be just enough to keep it close. I think they're 6-point underdogs, and I hate always picking them teams to cover in that situation but not win. But they're absolutely good enough. You saw them against Northwestern where they gave up the one touchdown early, and then the defense rose up and was fantastic. So Duke's good this year. So I think they absolutely could end up winning at Baylor.
What's Nebraska's issue?
They're not very good at college football.
Oh, okay. Is that all?
Thanks.
Because I was told that was going to change with Scott Frost there.
It will. It's going to be fun. This is going to be a thing. It's going to be a blast. But they don't have the guys, and they just don't have the talent there quite yet. They had the differentiating factor in Adrian Martinez. The problem, as shown in the first game, doesn't help when Colorado twists the guy's leg. But the quarterback gets rocked in this offense that he runs. So if you can have a guy like Adrian Martinez, but he is going to take shots and he's already knocked out after the first game, they are going to have a very fun offense that's going to be a problem with Wisconsin and the Big Ten West for a long time. They just don't quite have those guys that he's going to need. They had them. They had Colorado. Colorado's pretty good. They had that game, and they just could not stop Steven Montez and that Colorado offense, who, you know, they're going to be pretty good in a mediocre Pac-12 this year.
Pete, have a great weekend, man. Thank you.
Have a good one, guys.
That is Pete Futak.
What's wrong with Nebraska? They suck at college football. Oh, right. Yeah, okay. Forgotten that whole thing.
The Midday Midway comes up. I have a man who was busted for doing something that I think he should be receiving kudos and applause instead of punishment. I also have a bad day for Lizard Man.
There's a Lizard Man?
Lizard Man had a bad day.
All right. I've got two comeback stories, one good, one bad, and we'll talk a little. We got a feel-good story as well, too. That's next in the Midday Midway on Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.